You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are here with me today. Oh, we've got another fascinating show in store for you today. I hope you caught our show last week, and this week I have another fascinating guest talking all about fear. You know, it's a topic we don't talk a lot about on this show, but I think fear is very important to kind of share some light on it. But of course, we have our quotes of the day from the universe and from Abraham. So let's get started. I know you've been waiting all week long for your quotes. Let's see what the universe and Abraham have in store for us today. From the universe: "It's up to you. It's entirely up to you. And this just might be all you ever need to know. Say yes." The universe. We love our quotes from Mike Dooley in the universe. Being a little empowering, I think, today, because it really is all up to us. And let's see, talk about that, I think, a little bit during this interview. And let's see what Abraham has to say. From Abraham: "If you don't have to justify the good that flows to you, it is a given. You are of more value in the joy of your cross-stitching than in the struggle of your ironing." Abraham. See, two quotes, and they're always very apropos for our guests, that actually very much relate to each other. You see, the universe is telling us that really, as you've heard me say many times on the show, we kind of create the world around us. We really, by how we respond to the things that come to us, the people around us, by the energy that we put out, we attract different experiences, different people, and really we create the world around us. That's why it's entirely up to us. And that's why, you know, ultimately, if we really understand that we have control over what we put out, over what we respond, and by what we respond, we create what happens in our life, you know, then it doesn't matter whether things are going well or not. We can always change things however we please. But if we're always living a reactive life, if we're always living in a way that we're giving our power away to other people, other things, circumstances, anything, then, you know, you've given your power away, you're not necessarily going to feel like you can change things. So I think it's very important to realize that. And kind of hand in hand with that, you know, sometimes we have a problem with things just going well, with just feeling good. I mean, it's amazing with the work I've been doing lately how, as I've seen people heal and grow, and they just, all of a sudden, they're not used to, like, things going good and feeling good, and it's like, oh my God, like, I don't know if I can deal with this. And because we think, like, we have to earn good things for us, we think we have to deserve good things happening to us. The truth is, we don't. And this is what Abraham is saying: we don't have to justify good things. You know, we deserve them just because of the fact that we're being. And actually, when we're allowing good stuff to come to us, when we're being more in joy, when we're being more happy, that actually we bring more value to the world than when we're struggling and when we're striving and so hard and, oh, I got to get this done, I got to get that done. Instead of saying, you know what, I just love what I do. You know, I often say to people when I meet them that, you know, I'm the luckiest guy in the world because I come to work and I do what I love to do every single day. And I know that by showing up that way in the world, that I am being of more service to people and of more value to this world than if, you know, I'm showing up going, oh my God, I got to build my business more. I got to get more clients. I got to do more. Oh, you know, and I'm struggling with all the challenges. I don't believe in struggling. I believe in dancing with our things. So anyway, two short but sweet quotes of the day. I hope you enjoyed them. Of course, next week we'll have two more quotes of the day. And now it is my extreme pleasure to introduce Joan Kingsley, who is a psychotherapist and author of the brand new book, Fear-Free Organization, Vital Insights from Neuroscience to Transform Your Business Culture. She has private practice in London. She's an honorary consultant psychotherapist at the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery and is on the psychotherapy register at the School of Life. She practices also as an executive coach and has vast amounts of experience working with businesses in supporting their staff and human resources. She's a member of the New York Academy of Sciences. I'm sensing a theme here. New York, a fellow at the Royal Society of Arts and a member of the Royal Academy of Medicine. She spent the past 25 years researching the links between brain systems and our psychological lives. So welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Joan.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. So you don't know this about me yet, but my wife's a psychotherapist. So psychotherapists always have a very special, near and dear place in my heart. Yeah, she's constantly analyzing me, but, you know, I've learned to deal with it. So I'm curious. I mean, you've been a therapist for a long time. Did you have any? Do you have any specialty in your practice?
No, I'm rather eclectic, and I took up psychotherapy when I was 50.
Oh, really?
Yes. I mean, I'm an old person, you see. I'm an old wise person, an old soul.
You know, as long as you're young at heart, that's what counts, right?
I'm married to an Englishman. We moved back to London. My girls were 7 and 11, and I thought, gosh, I've got to find something new to do in my life. I mean, I was an actress. I worked in advertising.
Oh, really?
So I have a broad spectrum of experience. And I signed up for a psychotherapeutic course because it was in Regent's Park. It seemed nice. I had no idea whether I was going to like it. I walked in and it changed my life. And within 5 years, I had a booming practice.
Really?
Paul Brown, who's a co-author of the book, mentored me, hired me to write things on communication for British Telecom. So, you know, it was just a... You know, you talk about moments in your life that are life-changing, and the day I walked into that classroom, it changed my life.
What about that class was like, what made that light bulb turn on and say, aha?
I think it was Regent's College is an existentially oriented, and the whole idea of the philosophy grabbed me. So it's, you know, although everything is based in Freudian theory, the idea that one is examining one's life from a living and being perspective and learning how to accept the realities of life and what is and who you are, and then you can go and change yourself in the world.
But
if you're constantly blocking your givens, then you're in big trouble. And that's what appealed to me, was studying the philosophers, because it was much more than just becoming a psychotherapist. It was learning a whole philosophical way of life.
Well, I mean, in 5 years you had a booming practice. That's pretty quick. I know this from the inside out. Were there any challenges in becoming a psychotherapist for you? Was there anything about it that, you know, was, you know, a little bit of a struggle?
other than learning how to do the work, I did my training at Charing Cross Hospital in the psychiatric unit. And that really was very challenging because I was working with people who had been inpatients in the hospital, had been on a wait list for 2 years.
Wow.
And, you know, were so desperate for help. But people with schizophrenia, personality disorders. And it was a wonderful training ground because, you know, wonderful therapists and psychiatrists doing the you know, helping us out and having that those weekly sessions with them going through everything. And I really learned about a lot about the kind of emotional signals that get transmitted between in a session and between people. So when you're working with somebody who's quite struggling with mental problems, it's very tiring. And it's learning what's me, what's not me. And of course, take that right into working in business organizations because Paul Brown is a business psychologist. So, you know, that's where I did all my business training. So, cool. It's fantastic. Cool.
So, so I do want to get to the book, but just one last question before we get to the book, which is, training in England, I'm just wondering, is there a, do the British and the Europeans kind of take a different approach to psychotherapy than we do here in the United States?
They don't really take a different approach. I think, you know, people are moving away from psychoanalysis because of the time involved and the cost. And I think that's happening there, that's happening here. What I find in the UK is that I am not working with a lot of neuroses. I'm working mostly with repression, particularly with men. So it's a different kind of cultural thing. Underneath it all are our emotions. And emotions are common throughout cultures, throughout species.
Absolutely. So what gave you the idea to focus on fear?
Okay, so in the early 80s, Joseph Ledoux, I think he was at Rockefeller at the time, he was doing, he's a neuroscientist, and he was doing major research on the fear pathways in the brain of rats, but rats have very similar fear systems to human beings. At the same time, all of the MRI scanning was happening, all this new technology, so they could... It used to be that they had to rely upon brain damaged people to study what was going wrong in the human brain.
Right.
Now they could look at brains as they were living, breathing, feeling, and responding in brain scanners. So there was this huge explosion of knowledge, and it was just at the time that I was writing my dissertation. And so the... Freud, it went right back. Freud was a neuroscientist, and he developed his theories based on neuroscientific research. And the technology wasn't available to him, and he wrote about it to prove his theory. So here we are in the 80s, all of this explosion of knowledge. Daniel Goleman is the science editor at the New York Times, and he is writing about Joseph Ledoux's research. Daniel Goleman writes Emotional Intelligence. And I'm sitting there, we're sitting there, and we got to do some work with Daniel Goleman at British Telecom. So it was amazing. And so I just got caught up with, it just grabbed me, the whole subject.
All right, well, we're going to go out for a quick commercial break. When we come back, let's we'll start talking about some of the basics of the idea of just a fear-free organization and sort of where the whole idea for the book came from. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. My guest this hour is Joan Kingsley, author of The Fear-Free Organization. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hello, I'm JC.
I'm Joan.
And welcome to 21st Century Entrepreneur. We bring education,
insight,
knowledge,
awareness,
trouble,
craziness, and fun
for you, the entrepreneur who's looking to build your business
and your community. Listen every Friday from noon to 1 Eastern on talkradio.nyc. And you can tweet us at 21st CE Radio or Talk Alternative.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Then we're talking to Joan Kingsley, author of The Fear-Free Organization. So, Joan, I'm curious, with your years of practice in psychotherapy, why, when you decided to work on this book, did you focus sort of on business and organizations?
Well, we do a lot of work with people in organizations, and even if I'm seeing somebody privately for psychotherapy,
right,
they're going to work, and you know, often we'll spend the first year of work, because psychotherapy is a long process, you know, working on the emotional problems, and then we get more into the how things get played out in business organizations. So you know, I'm always working with people in business, whether I'm actually working in an organization or working privately.
Right.
And it's all about relationships.
Right. And how somebody shows up in their life is going to be how they show up at their job as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And so what was the germ or the seed that sprung into, that grew eventually into this book of the Fear-Free Organization?
Well, we were seeing, and we did some work with our third author, Sue Paterson, who was at Shell at the time. She is a geologist.
A geologist.
We went to Groningen in Holland to work with her exploration team, filled with champagne bottles, because if they found gas or oil, you know.
It was a big deal.
Big deal.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of fear running around in the organization, and particularly women in a male-dominated environment. Obviously, oil and exploration is predominantly male.
Yes.
So we were helping Sue and her team think about that. And then we all got talking. We all just got on really well, Sue and Paul.
That there was a lot of fear there, fear of what?
Fear of not performing, fear of...
Fear of failure, fear of success.
Yes, yes. You know, they had a lovely boss, but they'd had previously somebody who was not so lovely, so there was some bullying that had been going on. Fortunately, that had stopped. But you know, it's just so predominant in our business environments today.
And
what we found is that most managers,
many managers.
It's very easy to tap into another person's fear system. It's the easiest emotion to trigger, and that makes absolute sense from an evolutionary perspective, because if you don't have fear, you're not going to survive. But people who become managers in business organizations are promoted because of the work they do, not because they're good with people. And then suddenly, and I've had people, I had somebody who I worked with who ran a scientific lab, and she was a brilliant scientist, and suddenly she was promoted, and she's running this whole department of scientists with all their personal problems.
It's funny how we think that just because someone can be a good quote-unquote technician and have excellent technical skills about something, that you move them up the ladder, and now they're responsible for other people, that one translates to the other. And that's not necessarily so.
It's certainly not so.
You can have someone who's very good at working with people, but who's a lousy technician.
Yeah, and if you have somebody who's insecure about themselves, who doesn't know themselves, who doesn't have insight.
It all gets amplified, right?
Yeah, and then a lot of anger gets, you know, is felt internally by the manager, because I can't cope with this, and that anger gets pushed out into the environment they work in, and you know, taps into another person's fear system, and you can use fear to manage somebody very successfully in the very, very, very short term. Long term,
and that's
terrible.
What a lot of people do, is they use fear actually to control people, right? I mean, you know, you can say a lot of certain aspects of religion are very fear based in order to control people.
Absolutely.
Certain aspects of the way media, in some ways, right? They use a lot of fear in media in order to get sure that people keep buying the newspapers, keep watching the
news
shows.
Never mind politicians.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, got it. So, what did you find about like the difference of how fear works sort of on an individual level as opposed to sort of a group level?
That's a very, very good question, because we're all different.
Yeah.
And we tell a story in the book of the, and this is, all the stories in the book are true.
Mm-hmm.
So these two people who'd grown up in a community together
mm-hmm.
and were now working in the same organization.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting at lunch and they're reminiscing about some birthday party they went to when they were like 7 years old.
Right.
And she's saying, "What? Oh, God, we had so much fun at that party. And remember Clem the Clown?" And he's saying, "Clem the Clown, that is the worst memory from my childhood. I was so terrified.
Yeah.
So there you are, same party, two people at the same party come away with completely different perceptions about what happened and how they feel about it.
Right.
Move that into a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're grown up, you're in a meeting, and you think you know what's being said, but everybody at the meeting is hearing something different, and it's all about their experiences and what they're focusing on.
Right, exactly. I one time heard someone say, you know, the greatest miracle in life is the fact that we can communicate by sound, because, you know, one person is like opening their mouth and going, wah, 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 and like other people think they're hearing what the other person is saying, but in reality, it can be vastly different.
Well, most communication is nonverbal.
Right.
And you know, when you go for a job interview, the moment you walk in that door, the person who's going to interview has decided in or out. You may not get the job, but if you're out, you're never going to get that job.
Right.
So there are, you know, the way we hold our bodies and how we communicate and the chemistry is so powerful. And I don't think that people appreciate that properly.
Right.
You know, they think, you know, we live in this very highly logical world, so we think we can logic everything, and life isn't like that.
No, not at all, not at all. Many things defy logic, absolutely.
Yes.
So I'm curious with the book. So you're a psychotherapist. Paul Brown is...
He's a psychologist.
Psychologist.
He's a clinical and organizational psychologist.
And Sue Patterson
is an oil and gas expert, consultant.
Kind of an interesting combination.
It's fabulous. And Paul now lives in Vietnam.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's moved to Vietnam for, you know, his son lives in Laos, and, you know, he's set up, he's doing very well in Vietnam.
Oh, interesting.
Sue lives in Aberdeen. And we all bring different expertise into this.
Right.
So
what got the three of you to say, you know, we should really write a book about this stuff?
We were having lunch one day, and we were talking, and Paul said, "Let's write a book." But I've got to tell you, that was 15 years ago.
15 years. Wow.
We spent a long time thinking about this book, having false starts, and, you know, it was really a journey.
Mm.
And Paul would always say, "This is the right time to write the book." If we'd written the book 15 years ago, we wouldn't have had the body of knowledge that exists today.
Okay.
So although we instinctively knew things, it's very good to have the science underneath.
Yeah,
I did a huge... I wrote most of the neuroscientific stuff in the book.
Okay.
And I did a huge amount of research. Okay. Everything is backed up with references. Every single thing. You know, you'll see at the end of those chapters, the reference.
What were some of the surprises you got along the way? Like as the book was unfolding, did it kind of unfold the way you thought it would, or were there some twists and turns you didn't expect?
Well, I have a very unusual way of writing, which is I sit down, and I'm very good at coming up with chapter titles or headings, and then I look at the computer screen, And then I play solitaire.
Yeah, kind of similar to the way
I do. A lot of procrastination. But I kind of learn while I'm writing. And I something pops up in my brain. And, and, you know, we write about eureka moments in the book, which are very important for creativity.
Right.
And that's kind of how I write. I have eureka moments. I don't sit. My older daughter is a writer.
Uh-huh.
And she sits and she's a novelist. And she does her chapter plans and everything. For me, forget it. It's an organic thing.
Yes,
but again, it's very individual. Some people love mind maps. Some people want to know the whole book plotted out. But I just, and the frustration for Sue and Paul, because I was writing the first half of the book, was waiting for me to finish my writing so they could move forward with theirs. And it was just wonderful. And I found wonderful things on the internet, you know, things that were written in the 1800s in old newspapers.
Oh, really?
I mean, it was amazing what I found.
What's an example of one of those old bits? Do you remember?
Well, I think Hewlings Jackson, who is my hero. Mm. Now, very few people know who Hewlings Jackson is.
Not a familiar name to me.
He was a neuroscientist. There's a wing in the hospital I work in called the Hewlings Jackson Ward.
Ah.
And he discovered, based on Darwinian theory, because everything comes from Darwin.
Right.
Forgive the people who don't believe in that, but I very much do.
Uh-huh.
That there are parallel systems in the brain. Okay, so while you're thinking, you're feeling, you're doing, you know, your body is ticking over the brain. So they're all happening at the same time in parallel.
Yeah.
And sometimes they connect, sometimes they don't. And Hewlings Jackson set out that kind of blueprint of how the brain works. And it made everything that's happened in neuroscience possible.
Wow.
And so I found some old papers of his on the internet and interviews with him. And that was thrilling.
Oh, I bet.
Because I wrote about him in my dissertation because Freud was very connected to Hewlings Jackson. So he couldn't have done what he did without Hewlings Jackson's theory. So, you know, he's my hero.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. You know, speaking about Darwin, I actually just last November, me and my wife, we did a vacation to Ecuador and we went to the Galapagos Islands.
Lucky you.
So we actually got to see some of the things. And I actually learned some of those. This big, on one of the islands is this big statue of Darwin with an iguana and a sea lion and a giant Galapagos tortoise and some other things around him. But what I didn't know was one of his experiments, one of the things that he did is down there is the only place you find marine iguanas, which are like these black iguanas that can actually live underwater for a period of time. And so he took a regular iguana, like tied a rope around it in a weight and like throw it overboard, and would like pull it up after 5 minutes, it would still be alive. Then he would do it longer, that's and then good. 10 minutes, and then 15 and 20. And he found that they could basically live about 45 to 50 minutes underwater, and that was it. And that was sort of what they were able to adapt to and what they needed to do because they eat the algae underneath.
How interesting.
You know, and this is like the only place in the world where you find iguanas
exciting,
like that.
Isn't
yeah,
it
really was. It was fascinating. It was fascinating. Okay.
We only know little bits of the world.
No, exactly. Yeah. The world is such a fabulous place. I'm such a big believer in travel and like seeing different parts of the world. You learn so much. It's amazing.
Yes.
All right. I digress. But it's time for us to take another commercial break. So when we come back, let's dive a little bit more into some of the advice that you've come up with in Fear Free Organization for what organizations can do to make their workplace, I guess, more effective, more efficient, and a less fear-based place.
Great.
So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Ding 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 ding
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
Are you looking for a show where people talk about real stuff like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Well, then you have come to the right place because the Rob and Callie Show is doing just that. For the last 10 years, Rob and I have been having our own version of Sunday morning therapy sessions on the phone, and now we're bringing it to the radio.
So tune in and call in live Wednesdays 8 to 8:30 on talkradio.nyc.
And that's Eastern Standard Time, so join us.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. So, Joan, in the process of coming up with these insights from neuroscience and applying them to a business culture, so what are, maybe just give us a sort of a thumbnail sketch of like, what are some of the big advices in the book that managers and CEOs can really apply to their organization to make, you know, this thing we call a business a little less fear-based? And, yeah. And why should they, actually, yeah. is the other question.
Well, I think the important thing is this book is not a how-to book in that, you know, the okay. traditional sense.
Right.
It's a book saying to leaders and managers, when you are using fear to manage another human being, mm-hmm. this is what's happening inside their brains. Mm-hmm. This is the effect you are having on the person you are scaring.
Right.
And do you really want to do that? And this is what right. happens when somebody's watching their back. They get into survival. We want people thriving at work.
Right.
And what people in the grips of fear are doing is they're surviving.
Right.
So
and you also in the book kind of point out the long-term detrimental effects of that.
Well, they're terrible because yeah. you wind up with somebody who's frozen, who can't
right.
create.
Right.
Who's thinking about everything they say. And you wind up, actually, people say, what's the worst thing that can happen? And I say, people can die.
Yeah.
You look at the Challenger space shuttle. That was
yeah.
a cover-up.
Oh,
there were
God.
People who wanted to blow the whistle. They knew there was right. something wrong with the O-ring.
Right.
And yeah, they didn't want to lose their jobs.
Right.
So they just told their, you know, managers, their leaders, what they wanted to hear.
Right.
And then you wind up with the Challenger space shuttle. I mean, that's, you know, an extreme example. But there have been other examples. I won't mention them
yes.
because companies are, you
yes.
know, very sensitive today. But we all read the news and we know
yes.
about terrible things that happen and how businesses cover these things up.
Right.
They know there's something wrong. And they cover it up, and then people die. So that really is the worst thing
right,
that can happen, and it does happen.
Right. People die. The environment gets contaminated.
Yes.
I mean, just all kinds of things that just
yes.
make life less livable.
Yeah. And what we all want is safety.
Mm.
We want to feel safe at work.
Right.
We want to feel safe in our lives. We want to trust the people we work with. So
right.
for managers, their biggest job is creating honest, open, trustworthy relationships.
Right. There was a time in the past, in really the height of the industrial age, where organizations really needed to kind of get people to fit into a cog in order to work on an assembly line and to just
yeah.
kind of work in sync.
Yeah.
But nowadays, with change happening faster than ever before, being bombarded with information, being really every country now is a global economy,
yeah.
we really can't afford to operate that way anymore, can we?
No. But what's interesting, if you go back to those old-fashioned organizations,
mm-hmm.
they were very community-based because the world of work was not global the way it is
right,
now.
Right.
So that even though people might have been going in on an assembly line and mm-hmm. doing really boring stuff, there
right.
were profound relationships within the community. And with the people who owned the companies. So you think
right.
about the textile mills. Think of Carousel.
Right.
You know, it's a wonderful musical that takes place, you know, in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's all about community. Where is community in a business today?
Yeah, absolutely.
And where are the relationships? And young people are really struggling. I have two young daughters.
Yes.
And I, you know, you read about the millennials and cool and, you know, wear T-shirts to work. T-shirts are the new suit.
Right.
I mean, it's just another uniform.
Right, right. And that community facet is even more tenuous than it's ever been before, especially now that you have virtual organizations. Like, I speaking with a woman who runs a company that's all about workplace diversity. And her team is literally spread across the country. I mean, she's got some people here in New York, but like 80% of her team is spread across the country. So where's the community in that? I mean, they're communicating online.
Well, you can find ways of creating community, and it can be very exciting. And progress is progress. And we are built to adapt.
Yes.
And a lot of people sit around and moan about, oh, dear, the world is changing and I'm not going to change with it. Well, that doesn't work either.
No, it doesn't.
You know, my older daughter went to Columbia Journalism School, and I went back for an alumni weekend because she had presented a book in their book thing.
Uh-huh.
And I went to lectures, and they had alumni from the 70s. That was a, you know, 1972 was the year they were, you know, honoring that year. And they were the tutors were getting up and saying, this is the world today. And we are going to help you adapt to be in that world. Because everybody's sitting there feeling alienated and isolated. So there are ways to connect to this new world. But one has to keep a very positive attitude and not get stuck in the moaning and groaning mire.
And the fear.
In the fear, which, and that kind of fear is kind of self, it's generated from not knowing how the world is, but then it's fed by internal fear.
Right. Do you find that fear within organizations is kind of a top down phenomenon?
Without question. Without question.
Okay.
If you have really good, open, honest leadership who you trust and leaders who hire the right people and create a good culture, you are not going to find the fear down at the bottom. And if those leaders won't tolerate it. They get rid of toxic people very quickly.
I see.
So, you know, for young people, this is very important. Do your research. Find out what kind of company you're interviewing
with.
What's the culture and not the mission statement?
Go
to Starbucks on the corner.
Yeah.
Try and ride up in the elevator. See what people look like. Do they look happy? Do they look energized? Do they look excited? If they don't go work there.
Right. No, I mean, and especially now, like so much is online and with social media, you just got to find a few people who work at an organization who are active bloggers or on Twitter or Facebook, and you can find out a lot.
In big fear organizations, you won't find that online because people lose their jobs if they talk about it. So you have to, you know, it's like when one company wants to buy another company, they do a lot of forensic work, and you have to be doing that kind of work. You'd be amazed at the, you know, things that are forensically done to find out about another company.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Due diligence. It's all part of due diligence.
Due diligence. Absolutely. So, in the process of writing the book, and since it just came out when?
It was published in London on July 3rd, and it was published here on the 28th of July.
Oh, wow. So
very exciting.
Very recent. Okay.
Yes.
What kinds of organizations are open to the message that you have in here?
I think entrepreneurs are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very powerful in America. Entrepreneurs are not so widespread in the United Kingdom. I think you'd have to say that, you know, by and large, the media may not be open to this.
Mm-hmm.
Government departments may not be open to this. Financial services, you know, are probably not going to be open to this.
Right.
And, you know, I say there are some people who thrive on anxiety-driven cultures.
Yeah.
If you're not that person, you don't belong in that environment.
Right.
Realistically, is a big hedge fund that's making hundreds of billions of dollars for their clients going to become fear-free? I doubt it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's step by step. There are some technology companies that are very interested because, you know, they want their people to be creative. So they really are doing a lot of research. There's Holacracy, which is becoming big in Silicon Valley.
What did you call it?
Flat structures.
Oh, right.
And somebody named Laloux, Frederick Laloux, I think, wrote a book called Reinventing Organizations, which is based on Holacracy.
Okay.
So that, you know, your teams generate themselves. So you don't have bosses. Right. Well, you know, there's always a boss somewhere who's dictating.
Yes, there's always at the very least a CEO or president.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you have any examples of just very short, quick example of maybe an organization that took these principles to heart and made a shift in what happened?
Well, I work with very closely with someone named Nancy Klein, and she has written a book called Time to Think, More Time to Think. I don't know the name of the organization she works in South Africa.
Okay.
She does a lot of work in South Africa, and her theory is that because of Mandela, every businesses in South Africa are open to change in a way that other organizations in other countries aren't.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's part of their... They've had to change everything.
Right. They've had a very radical change.
Yeah. And she teaches people how to think, how to make decisions. And she does it through listening. Through not interrupting people. Through letting people generate their own decisions. She calls it generative thinking. And that she has actually consulted into governments, and I've done training with her, and she's my coach and mentor now. She has a way of running business meetings where, you know, everybody, it's around the table. We've all been at meetings where you have three people who speak, and they're generally the bosses. But in a Nancy Klein Time to Think meeting, everybody gets their chance to participate. And also, the people at the meeting are there because they need to be there, not because they want to be there. So it's, you know, and things are discussed at meetings that can be actioned on. So it's not just an open dialogue.
Right.
So those are the ways that companies can begin to change. And actually, it's changing the small things that's really powerful.
Right. It's the little things that all add up that can make huge shifts.
Yeah. If you have people, if you have managers who know how to listen to the people who work for them, that makes a huge difference. Because when people are listened to, they feel acknowledged. They feel they have status and certainty and autonomy. And these things are very powerful.
Wonderful. Okay, time for us to take our last commercial break, believe it or not. So when we come back, let's talk about what your intention is for this book and how you think it'll make an effect and maybe what's coming in the future for Joan Kingsley. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and storytelling? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your brand new radio host on talkradio.nyc. I've been professionally writing and drawing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for over 15 years. Catch my new show, Secrets of the Sire, Fridays at 11 a.m., and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com right now.
Someone, man.
talkingalternative.com.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been talking this hour with Joan Kingsley, author of the book, The Fear-Free Organization. So we've been talking a lot about sort of fear in the organizations, kind of in our lives. I'm just curious, like with technology and with the interconnectedness that we have now, does fear spread more rapidly? Is fear kind of taken on, I don't know, any different characteristics given we're much more interconnected?
I think the relationship aspect of life has changed so much. Mm-hmm. So I have two daughters. They are millennials,
mm-hmm.
born between 1980 and whatever. So one was born in 80, one was born in 84.
Mm-hmm.
And my younger daughter has closed her Facebook account. In fact, I interviewed her for the book.
Oh.
She cannot bear having her privacy. And my older daughter feels the same. She still has her Facebook account. She doesn't use it very much.
Uh-huh.
But they both feel very strongly that this is a force of evil that they've made. No, seriously,
really?
You're laughing. That it makes relationships very complicated. And your privacy is invaded all the time. And Annabelle, my younger daughter, says, you know, it's horrible because she'll be doing something at 10 o'clock at night and a text message comes in and she feels if she doesn't respond to it immediately, whether it's a social friend or somebody from the office, is irrelevant. She doesn't feel like she has privacy anymore. And that people get angry if you don't respond immediately. And you see people at restaurants, a young couple, and all they're doing is looking at their phones. I mean, what is going on?
I do see that a lot in New York, yeah.
But the young people don't really like it very much. They feel that Big Brother is running their lives, and they're not happy about it.
Right. You know. No, I laugh when I hear you say that Facebook is a force of evil, just because there are a lot of people who feel Mark Zuckerberg is a force of evil.
Well.
But I'm a big believer in using technology, but not letting it control you. So, yeah, I mean, I understand, like, people get really hung up on that stuff, but I'm like, weekends, you know, I turn it off, and I only post or respond if I feel necessary. And the other thing, too, is your privacy is invaded only as much as you share.
Yes.
So if you don't want people to know about something personal, you don't share it.
You don't share it, but everybody is sharing everything.
Everything,
so now there's
right.
Instagram and all these photographs.
Yes.
And people, every move they make throughout their day is photographed. And why do people take pictures of food, for heaven's sake?
Actually, you know what's annoying me more than anything else now is people taking pictures of their feet. I like see people on vacation taking pictures of their feet all over. I'm like, who wants to see your feet? I don't get it.
And we went to St. Petersburg a few years ago, and there were lots of Asian tourists there.
Yes.
I love Asian people, but you couldn't see the artwork because everybody's holding their phones up taking
pictures.
And
their iPads,
so you can't see anything. And, and what about experiencing something?
Right.
Because what you're doing is you're putting a wall between you and whatever it is you're trying to experience.
Right, absolutely.
And how does this relate to fear in organizations? Well, you know, really smart, good organizations, what they do with their older managers and employees is they assign them a young mentor. So they do. So you have a sort of, you know, 25-year-old mentoring for social media, for technology, somebody who's 50. And that is fantastic.
Yeah.
And more organizations really would do well to do that.
I love that.
Because you open up lines of communication, you know, and everything is built on empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very easy to be 50, 45, 50 and feeling intimidated by the younger generation and not being able to step in their shoes. But as soon as you have that mentoring relationship, you're suddenly dealing with a person.
Yes.
You know, instead of a label.
And it makes life a lot easier.
Yes.
Do you have a case study of a fear-free organization maybe we can highlight for our audience?
Well, my husband runs a fear-free organization.
Ah.
He is an entrepreneur.
Okay.
His name is Philip Kingsley, and he's a trichologist. So he's a world's leading expert on hair and scalp. I sit on the I'm on the board of directors. I'm very involved in strategy. And
I understand he's kind of famous for coming up with a certain phrase.
Yes, the bad hair day.
Yeah.
How did you know that? Wow.
Oh, I have my spies everywhere.
But he has a clinic in New York. He has a clinic in London. He also has a product company which markets his products in throughout the world, really, and here as well. And people do not leave. People never leave him.
Really?
So he has people in New York. He opened his clinic in 1975 in New York. He has three people who've been working for him since 1975.
Wow.
His director in London, Glenn Lyons, who is a wonderful trichologist as well, just had his 50th anniversary.
Wow.
And there was somebody else 45 years. So he believed, he's like unconditional love for his, the people who work for him. And he's fun, he's energetic, he works hard, and people
respond. So what does he do when fear pops up in his organization, or does it just not because he creates such an environment?
Well, obviously it pops up because then you get these subcultures and they try and keep it from him, but then I'm around to let him know about it. And our daughter Annabelle works at the company now, so he finds out, and we have a wonderful chairman, Graham Fish, who he believes what you do if somebody's not performing is you find their potential and you get the best out of them. And if they don't want to work with you, they're going to leave. So he's never fired anybody. People who don't find that they're not fitting in will go and get another job.
So it's self-selecting in a way.
Yes, and there's no fear around. It's wonderful.
Wonderful, beautiful. Well, Joan, thank you so much for popping in during your visit here in New York to come to the studio. The book is called The Fear-Free Organization, Vital Insights from Neuroscience to Transform Your Business Culture. Where can people find the book? I'm assuming...
Well, Amazon. Barnes & Noble. I'm not sure where else. Kogan Page, the publishers, have a website as well. I think you can order
it. Have a website for the book itself, or
we were so busy writing the book. We're right now creating. We have somebody creating the website, so it should be live pretty soon.
Okay, great, great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and storytelling? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your brand new radio host on talkradio.nyc. I've been professionally writing and drawing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for over 15 years. Catch my new show, Secrets of the Sire, Fridays at 11 a.m., and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com right now.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative.
Hello, I'm JC.
I'm Joan.
And welcome to 21st Century Entrepreneur. We bring education,
insight,
knowledge,
awareness,
trouble,
craziness, and fun
for you, the entrepreneur who's looking to build your business
and your community. Listen every Friday from noon to 1 Eastern on talkradio.nyc. And you can tweet us at 21st CE Radio or Talk Alternative.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your Conscious Consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.